Okay, so I started looking at each book in the Old Testament on the 27th of July, 2021. I can't actually remember that day. I don't know if you can, but I had it written down so I can tell you exactly when it was. We looked at about one book of the Old Testament a month, roughly in the order in which they happened, and it gave us a great sort of history of the world. And it can also rephrase that history word and say it was his story, God's story that we looked through there. And so today I set myself really the impossible task of summing up all those services, all the Old Testament. So I thought we'd start by just looking at the books, checking them out, which we did, and we've done all those that are coloured in. That's all the Old Testament. And it was quite a run through, wasn't it? And also our timeline is quite a long timeline as well. If we could summarize this, we could say 2,000 years or so from creation to Abraham, and then 2,000 years from Abraham to Jesus, and 2,000 years from Jesus to us. That's a very brief summary of that line, but there's loads of stuff happening there. Different world events on the top line, and the different colours depicting different times in Israel's history. So the red one being the divided kingdom, like this, and then the exile over there in Babylon. And then when they came back in the grey section, and then we've got a 400 years wait for the New Testament to start to happen. We've also got a map, just in case you're not quite sure where Israel is. Israel's at the far end of the Mediterranean, just down there, that tiny little red circle. Is showing us where it is, and there's Israel on its own, 300 miles long, 50 miles wide, not very big at all, but it's hit the headlines for the last 3 weeks. And there's something a bit more than just a war in the world, I believe, is going on there, because people are marching all over the world about it, and I think there's something else going on there. So we can just want to run through those walk through the Bible hand signs to give you that bit of a big picture of the Old Testament as we get to here. So it all began with the creation of the world, and God declared it was good. Adam and Eve ate from the tree and fall away from perfection. Sometime later, God sent a flood to wash the world clean and start again. The people tried to build a tower, but instead got spread out into nations. God made a promise to Abraham that he would have as many descendants as there are stars in the sky. Isaac was the first descendant. His name means laughter. Isaac had a son called Jacob, who had 12 sons and wrestled with God. Joseph is Jacob's favorite son. He's given an extravagant multicolored coat. Over 400 years later in Egypt, Moses leads the Israelites out of slavery. To celebrate God saving them, the Israelites have a festival called the Passover. On the journey from Egypt to the Promised Land, God gave the people the law. He also gave them instructions to make a tabernacle. And the tabernacle gave people God's people gave offerings to say sorry and had feasts to be thankful. Moses spent time counting the people. Anybody know how many that was? Roughly 600,000, roughly, yeah, 603,550, something like that. Counting the people, and then he sent 12 people to spy out the land. The people decided it was too difficult, so they had to spend 40 years wandering in the wilderness while the older generation were dying out. For the second time, Moses taught the law to a new generation. That's the book of Deuteronomy. Moses passed away then Joshua led the people into the Promised Land. They went in to divide the land and conquer it one city at a time. Each of the 12 tribes received their own patch of land. Joshua died and there was no leader, so judges came and ruled the land. Deborah held court under a palm tree. The least from the smallest tribe is Gideon. God performed a miracle through his fleece. Another judge was called Samson. His strength was in his hair. However, he was a bit foolish. During the time of the judges, there was a loving lady called Ruth. She was loyal and followed her mother-in-law to Bethlehem. Samuel heard from God, and people went to him for guidance. The people wanted a king, and Israel became a united kingdom. Saul was the first king. He had no heart for God. David became the second king. He had a whole heart for God. The next was David's son Solomon. He started well with God, but in the second half of his life, his heart grows away from God. After Solomon, Israel becomes a divided kingdom. Mostly bad kings rule throughout the land. God sends prophets to speak to his people. They don't listen, so God allows Israel to be scattered. Judah isn't listening either, and so they become exiled over to Babylon. And after 70 years in exile, the Persian king allows Judah to be returned. Zerubbabel leads his people in rebuilding of the temple. Over in Persia, that's over there, Esther becomes queen. She's bold and courageous. Ezra leads more people back to Judah. He reteaches the Bible to them. Finally, Nehemiah leads the people in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. The Old Testament ends with God making everyone wait for the promised Christ. Okay, so that is a kind of a big picture of the Old Testament, and it's an amazing picture to have in our minds, isn't it? And so our first reading now, and I'd like to ask anybody to somebody to read this for me, it comes from Colossians. So we're going from all that into Colossians now, but it is very relevant to the Old Testament. So if we could have somebody to read this reading, please. A volunteer. Thank you very much.
Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. He existed before anything was created and is supreme over all creation. For through him, God created everything in the heavenly realms and on earth. He made the things we can see and the things we can't see, such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, and authorities in the unseen world. Everything was created through him and for him. He existed before anything else, and he holds all creation together.
Thank you, Bridget. That was great. Okay, so we're going back in time. We're even going before time started to happen, before Adam and Eve, before creation. God existed there. Nobody made God. He was just there. And that passage was telling us he made the things we see and the things we don't see, such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, authorities in the unseen world. But not only that, he holds today, he holds all creation together. We've got an old memory verse. We could just read this together. By faith, we understand that the entire universe was formed at God's command, that what we now see did not come from anything that can be seen. Hebrews 11, verse 3. And so we have God, we have the Holy Spirit, and we have Jesus all there together before anything was made. And we've got a little chart here just to compare us with mankind. And so God is greater than man, and we see it in these different ways. We see that God had no beginning and will have no end. But as we know, man is born and man dies. We have beginnings and ends, don't we? God is independent. Man is dependent. God is spirit. Man has a physical body. God is everywhere at the same time, whereas man is limited to one place at a time. You know, we often want to spread ourselves, don't we? But God is the highest authority, and man should be under God's authority. It's the best place to be. So there's a great division between us and God. And yet so often we want to set ourselves up as our own gods, don't we? You know, we are the ones who do things, decide things and choose things and that sort of thing. But we need to see God is so much greater than ourselves. And so to carry on this kind of theme of the unseen, I want us to look briefly at angels and demons and thrones, rulers, kingdoms and authorities in the unseen world. And for that, we're going to look in Ezekiel chapter 28, verses 14 to 17. And here, Ezekiel is talking about the king of Tyre, but he's also talking about somebody else. And I believe that to be, thank you, Lucifer, Satan.
I ordained and anointed you as the mighty angelic guardian. You had access to the holy mountain of God and walked among the stones of fire. You were blameless in all you did from the day you were created until the day evil was found in you. Your rich commerce led you to violence, and you sinned. So I banished you in disgrace from the mountain of God. I expelled you, O mighty guardian, from your place among the stones of fire. Your heart was filled with pride because of all your beauty. Your wisdom was corrupted by your love of splendor. So I threw you to the ground and exposed you to the curious gaze of kings.
Thank you, Selena. And so not the easiest passage to understand there in Ezekiel, but it's talking about Satan and Lucifer, as well as talking about the king of Tyre. And so we see in here that Lucifer was an angel, and yet he fell. He rebelled against God because he was proud and wanted to be equal with God. And a third of the angels chose to follow Lucifer in his rebellion against God. And so it's Lucifer, Satan, the devil, as many names there we could use, was the chief angel. And the others that followed him we call demons or evil spirits. But it's all in the unseen world, which was talked about there in Colossians. And now we know that Adam and Eve fell. Like we use that word fall in the walkthrough, or fell, when they disobeyed God in the Garden of Eden. And death then entered the world. And we are born as fallen people because of Adam's sin. We have inherited a sinful nature. We find it so very easy to sin, to disobey God. And when we see little children, we see that nobody has to teach little children how to be naughty, you know. And it's not something we grow out of either. We just get better at covering it up so often and making excuses for those wrong thoughts and poor choices that we can so easily make. And so we see here that Lucifer, or Satan, is the one who falls. He was a good angel, and yet he fell from that position and became a bad, the bad angel. And he doesn't like Christians. And so that means trouble for us. We have to beware. He and his demons want to tempt us into evil, to big evil things or small evil things. But you know, the good news is that Satan is a defeated foe. He is Jesus defeated him at the cross of Calvary. But he still does have power and influence in this world, and is always fighting against God's people, whether they're the Old Testament people we read of in the Bible, or whether that's Christians today. Satan is out to get us. And we've had various memory verses, and one of those from 1 Peter 5:8, should we just say this together? Be alert, be on watch. Your enemy, the devil, roams around like a roaring lion, seek someone to devour. 1 Peter 5:8. But Satan is no match for the power of God. You know, we've got God right up here, Satan there, and ourselves down here, often struggling. You know, but there's another memory verse that I'm thinking of, and somebody, you have to think a bit harder for this one. What do? Submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. James 4:7. And again, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. James 4:7. So when we're in these problems, remember God's there, devil's here, and we're down here. You know, we don't fight the devil. We bypass the devil. We go to God. We submit to God. We need to resist the devil, and then we find that God will ensure that he flees from us. so we can do that because Jesus has defeated the devil. And so Jesus has defeated the devil. Okay, so I just want to mention Job now in the middle of the Old Testament, the book of Job. The book of Job is a really ancient book, probably happened in the time of Genesis. But a bit about Job, just a quick intro. Job was a godly man. But for one reason or another, God allowed Satan to take away Job's wealth, his health, and his family. And then we have a dialogue where Job is talking with his friends, and his friends are trying to help him. But Job protests his innocence to God, and he tries to reason with God. And Job is trying to tell God where he'd gone wrong and how to run the world in a better way, it seems. I wonder if we've ever tried to do that. You know, saying, God, if only you didn't let this happen. God, if only you did this instead. It's terribly arrogant of us and Job, isn't it, to start telling God how to run things. And that leads us to our next reading, which is Job 38, verses 1 to 7. And this is God's answer to Job after he'd had this big sort of confrontation, or not quite a confrontation perhaps, but are you up for it? Thank you.
Then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind. Who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorant words? Brace yourself like a man, because I have some questions for you, and you must answer them. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you know so much. Who determined its dimensions and stretched out the surveying line? What supports its foundations, and who laid its cornerstone? As the morning stars sang together, and all the angels shouted for joy. Can you shoot to the clouds and make it rain? Shout to the clouds and make it rain. Can you make lightning appear and cause it to strike as you direct? Who gives intuition to the heart and instinct to the mind?
Okay, so God kind of comes back at Job and says, you know, what do you know, actually? Do you know any of these things? And, you know, we suddenly realize that, yes, we know very, very little, don't we? You know, if we want to know if it's going to rain, we look at a weather forecast, and that's right or wrong or somewhere in between so often, isn't it? God is almighty. We are limited. Remember that chart we saw just now? We can see it again, hopefully. God has no beginning. He has no end. He is eternal. And yet we have just such a fleeting time here on this earth. God is independent. He doesn't need us to help him out. He often uses us, but he doesn't need us, whereas we are dependent upon one another and God. God is spirit. We have a physical body which limits us. God is everywhere at the same time. We are limited to one place at a time. God is the highest authority. We should be under his authority, not trying to build our own. And so I said those things to be a bit of a context of where the Old Testament comes from, what sort of is behind the Old Testament that we don't often think of, perhaps. And so I come in now to a time when I just want to try and sum up very briefly the Old Testament, what it's about. I'm thinking of a word beginning with L, just three letters long, that could possibly be central to the Old Testament. Anybody got there? Law. Thank you, Lois. Law. That's my word. That's what I tell the children in a walkthrough in the schools. You see, Moses came to give the Ten Commandments. There he is, we can imagine. And the first four commandments are between us and God. You must not have any other gods but me. You must not make for yourself an idol of any kind. You must not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And then the second six are about how we relate to each other as people. Honor your father and mother. You must not murder. You must not commit adultery. You must not steal. Do not testify falsely against your neighbor. You must not covet anything that belongs to your neighbor. And so ten simple rules that God gave via Moses to the people of Israel, and which are still very relevant for us today. And so this is what the Old Testament is centered around, these laws. And God says, keep these laws, all will go well. We've got to read them from Deuteronomy now, Deuteronomy 30. And this is right at the end of Moses' life. Moses is about 120. He's not going to live much longer. And he's saying these words to the people the second time round when he gives the law, you know, second law. So can I have a reader somewhere, please? Thank you, Rosemary. Tap.
Now listen, today I am giving you a choice between life and death, between prosperity and disaster. For I command you this day to love the Lord your God and to keep his commands, decrees and regulations by walking in his ways. If you do this, you will live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you and the land you are about to enter and occupy. But if your heart turns away and you refuse to listen, and if you are drawn away to serve and worship other gods, then I warn you now that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live a long, good life in the land you are crossing the Jordan to occupy. Today I have given you the choice between life and death, between blessings and curses. Now I call on heaven and earth to witness the choice you make. Oh, that you would choose life so that you and your descendants might live. You can make this choice by loving the Lord your God, obeying him, and committing yourself firmly to him. This is the key to your life. And if you love and obey the Lord, you will live long in the land the Lord swore to give your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Thank you. So Moses is just kind of laying it out for the people there. This is what your life should be surrounded by, the law of God. And then you will, all will go well with you. Choose life, he says. Choose life with God in all its abundance. And you will live a long time in this land. But you know, even when Moses was up at the mountain, Mount Sinai, receiving law and meeting with God, the people were down below making idols out of gold, worshipping them and going astray. And then after that, you know, when Moses and Joshua weren't around, you know, the judges came along. There's Deborah, Gideon, Samson and others, you know, and things improved for a while, but then they went back again away from God. Most of the kings of Israel didn't follow God. They didn't set a good example, as Paul was asking Timothy to do in our memory verse. They didn't set a good example. And so the people were led astray once more. They worshipped foreign gods. And the prophets came along and said, you know, follow God. Don't follow these other gods. But the people preferred to gamble with trouble. And then the people were sent out of Israel. You know, Israel scattered. People were sent out over there to Babylon for 70 years. And they said in those times, you know, we can't worship God because there's no temple. How can we follow God because there's no temple? But they came back and they rebuilt the temple, but they still wandered away from God. You know, if we made excuses like that, oh, we can't worship God because of this sort of thing and that sort of thing, and then we get that sort of thing back to ourselves, but we still find it really hard. You know, there's another problem there, isn't there? There's another problem. The prophet Ezekiel, all those years ago, had the answer. Ezekiel 36, 26 and 27. We've got thank you.
And I will give you a new heart, and I will put a new spirit in you. I will take out your stony, stubborn heart and give you a tender, responsive heart. And I will put my spirit in you so that you will follow my decrees and be careful to obey my regulations.
Thank you. Lovely. And so we see that God is saying, I will give you a new spirit and a new heart. That's what you need. But they had to wait for 400 years, didn't they, for Jesus to come, for them to see what was going on. And it's just, the thing is, none of us can get it right on our own. We needed to know the bad news before we can see the good news. You know, a lot of people don't like the Old Testament. It's difficult. It's hard. How can all these things come together? And how can a God of love be there? We want to find our own way, really, basically. But we can't see the remedy unless we know the problem. And sin is the biggest problem in the universe. And that's where the New Testament comes in. Recognize the name New Testament. Something new is going to happen. We need God's help and we need to come to God on his terms. He is a God who loves us and wants a relationship with us. That's awesome that God, the one, the creator, wants to know us as individuals and for us to know him. The good news is coming. We're in November. Christmas is not far away. We remember Jesus coming there as Emmanuel, God with us. And that's wonderful news. So we have to keep tuned into God to be reminded of how he's reached down to save us from our sin, to give us a new spirit and a new heart, not like the old ones, but like God's spirit and God's heart. So I just want us to run through the walk through the Bible signs, because that's just a nice little thing to do. It can come in towards the end of the service. So I'll stand over here so you can all follow me nice and easily. So let's start with creation. And we go creation, fall, flood, nations, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Passover, law, tabernacle, offerings and feasts, counting, spying, wandering, dying, second law, Joshua, divide and conquer, 12 tribes, judges, riding the bike, cycle of judges, judges, Deborah, Gideon, Samson, loving Ruth, Samuel, United Kingdom, Saul, no heart, David, whole heart, Solomon, half heart, divided kingdom, mostly bad kings, prophets speak, Israel scattered, Judah exiled, Judah returned, Zerubbabel temple, Esther queen, Ezra, people, Nehemiah, walls, brain. Dear Lord God, we just thank you so much that you are an awesome God. We cannot get to grips with you. You are far bigger than our imaginations, far bigger than our anything we can think of, Lord. But we thank you that we can trust in you. So, Lord, let us just 100% put our trust in you for our lives here, for everything we do, and for our futures in eternity with you, Lord. Thank you for this time. Just impress upon us your word, Lord, to encourage and bless us, we pray. And help us now in our time with a cup of tea and a biscuit, Lord, just to have a good fellowship with one another. Be a blessing to each other. Amen.